Namaste. Welcome. We are in month 8 of the Yoga of Entrepreneurship Thought Song, where we are diving into using your flow. And I'm so excited because today we have with us Alaya Gold, who will be talking with us and sharing her insights and perspectives on being in flow and expanding your capacity. A little bit about Alaya before I hand the floor over to her. Alaya is an expert in the field of intuitive business, marketing, and sales. She has over 10 years of experience in entrepreneurship, leadership, marketing, and social media. Her work has been featured in Wired magazine, and at the peak of her corporate career, she was a sought-after social media marketer who brought in over $3 million in traffic to the technology startup. After receiving her marketing degree in economics, she pursued her passion for women's empowerment and created a leadership organization for women, which grew to over 3,000 members in just 1 year. In her work as an intuitive business and money mentor, she combined her business school training with her intuitive abilities to create her own intuitive coaching and consulting business, which grew to over $108,000 in revenue in just 1 year and continues to expand. Thank you, Alaya, for being here. We're excited to have you.
Yay, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course. So we're going to talk a little bit about flow, and I thought maybe we could just start with, you know, when we say flow, what do you take that to mean, Alaya? What does that mean for you in your business and in living your life?
I think it means really being attuned to the seasons of your own life. So whether you're in your teens or 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s, really understanding where you are in your life, what kind of phase you're in. For me, actually, my flow really takes into account my astrology and my Vedic astrological charts. I'm not a Western astrology person. I'm a Vedic astrology person. Just understanding what cycles I'm in terms of my astrology. You know, if I'm in a moon period or a sun period or, you know, whatever period I'm in. Also understanding really not only my own personal flow in terms of my birth, but also understanding, you know, what's up with the planet, where is the collective, where are the collective energies going, and really, you know, creating my life and my business offers and just kind of like scheduling things and you know, putting things into their perspective times, and also being a mom and a wife and a daughter and a teacher. I have a lot of other people to consider and where those people are at, and kind of making the best decisions for the well-being of everyone involved that I have some say over, like my kids. So I think, you know, as entrepreneurs, at least for me, I tend to get very like, oh, let's do everything now, especially being a visionary entrepreneur. And so I think just understanding and really being in harmony with the fact that there is a summer and a spring and a fall and a winter and honoring all of those cycles, it can go a long way towards not being frustrated and just kind of taking everything in stride.
Yeah,
also
I love it
balance. I was just going to finish off and just say that it's just a balance, you know, because we don't want to be like twiddling our thumbs waiting all the time for other people to move or for, you know, for me to end my period, my sun period or moon period or whatever. So it's just this balance of taking appropriate action at appropriate times and like knowing when to strike and knowing when to kind of lay low.
Yes, I love that. And I love what you said about knowing that, you know, as an entrepreneur, that doesn't have to happen and probably can't even happen immediately. Like, everything can't happen immediately, even if you want it to happen immediately. I just commented the other day that I really wish sometimes that the minute of my conception of something, right, when I had the whole idea, vision, everything whole, right, from whole cloth, I wish that was the minute of execution. Like, I wish that was the harvest. It's not. It's the beginning of the cycle, right? It's not the harvest phase of the cycle. That's not when the production is over and you reap the rewards. That's the, like, but it's, I'm so engaged in that part of the process that it's like, oh, man, why isn't everything not easy?
Yeah.
So I love it that you said that, that it can, by watching the seasons and the rhythms of things, can help you ease into some level of understanding and relaxing into it a bit. So I'm wondering if you could say more about how you do that. Like, are there some practices? I know you talked about some astrology and witnessing the seasons, witnessing your own cycle. Certainly those are things that can be intellectual, but I imagine they also can intuitive or energetic, so that there's different dimensions to it. Could you talk a little bit about how you work with these kinds of seasons, kind of like on the ground in your own life?
I think it starts with being honest with yourself and being in truth and in reality about what's going on. One of the pitfalls that I made earlier on in my career is just assuming that the summer or the harvest would last forever. That's like a perpetual state of being.
I think maybe we've all done that.
And I'm like, wait,
oh my God,
minute.
It's going to be high times all the time. I'm going to have this much energy. I'm going to have this much money. It's going to be fabulous.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think one of the mistruths that's being purported that I've seen and that I've experienced is that the high times are always going to last and you can be the creator of your own reality and da-da-da and all that kind of thing. And, you know, maybe if you're the sun, maybe if you're a planet, that's true. Or, you know, but I haven't found it to be true of a human and of a woman in particular. I think there's high times and there's high tide and there's low tide and there's full moon and there's new moon. And it's just being honest with yourself about which part of the cycle you're in. And if you did make the mistake of having like lots of a boon time, a harvest, and not saving and canning and being like, oh shit, you know, and I made that mistake. So if you find yourself in a low tide or a new moon season or a winter season in your own personal life where you're, like, doing everything you can and the money's just not coming in, it's like, all right, well, acknowledging the truth of that and acknowledging the fact that you didn't plan ahead for this and save and just being like, okay, well, I got to lay low. I got to figure out what I'm going to do in the meantime to kind of gather my energy, to gather my power, to gather my force, to, you know, like, really – take the energy in so that I can prepare for the upcoming season where I'm going to be expending energy so that I can create my, you know, reserves now. And so I think it's just about being honest with yourself, of just really doing whatever it is that works for you. I find that elements, like touching in with the elements, like going to the beach, going on a hike, you know, even taking a shower, going for a swim, you know, doing things in the body or creative things like art, or I do sculpture and pottery and things like that. Meditation, I find not as much. I find that being in tune, for me personally, comes with being in tune with nature, which is like earth or air or fire, you know, going to the beach, having a fire, going camping or, you know, anything like that is going to get you in touch with like just what's real. Not, I think as entrepreneurs and as human creative spiritual beings, being the creators of our own reality, we can sometimes strong arm the reality, just kind of like put on yellow colored entrepreneur goggles and be like, no, that's not my reality. But I think a good, hard, honest look at what is really occurring and where you're really at and where you really have been and where you're going is goes a long way.
Yeah, there can really be, you know, I think it's a narrative of our culture as a whole, American, capitalist, I'll characterize it as materialist culture also, you know, instantaneous gratification, constantly connected.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's overwhelmingly also a strand of entrepreneurship because, like you said, because we're out there and there's always this feeling of, I'm going to make it happen, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we are constantly, those of us who are watching these and have found the pitfalls of being that way all the time, of being like, well, I'll just grab the bull by the horns and I'll make it happen, and then are faced with, why isn't this working? Why can't I make it happen all the time? Why didn't the same thing I just did months ago, right, now isn't working? Well, why would that be?
Yes.
Like it doesn't logically make any sense. I lost my train of thought a little bit, but I guess my only point was we're so inundated by this narrative that that is the way, that that is expected of us, that that is our nature, that that is the sort of the path of success, that if something's
mm-hmm.
not happening, that we can make it happen,
mm-hmm.
that we when we choose to step back from that and take a look at the seasons to acknowledge and be in awareness of kind of the flow of what's actually happening, we're flying in the face of everything that's kind of being thrown at us. There's not a lot of
mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of support in our modern day culture for these kinds of natural rhythms.
No, and I think it's looked upon a little bit like, oh, you're just gonna go and lay out in the grass all day.
Right.
Like, what are you doing? I'm regenerating. I'm gonna go regenerate. And it's really interesting because there is a cultural investment
mm-hmm.
in having everyone be in a state of constant near depletion.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually, in my opinion, there's actually, from the point of view of keeping a society consuming, like, because we have a consumerist culture, like a more consumer-oriented culture. And
right.
In order to keep you consuming, you've got to be kept in some state of lack, right? So actually, the way this society is built is in order for us to kind of keep our economy going, we've got to have a hole to fill. So it doesn't really serve the kind of the financial bottom line of our culture to create human beings that are overflowing with abundant energy reserves because they're not in lack, then therefore they would be buying less stuff, which would bring the, you know, the e-commerce, the commerce machine to kind of a slow trickle. And then, you know, people would be out of work and then people would have more leisure time on their hands. Like, God forbid, everyone's like sitting on the grass. Well, what happens then? And we're like, what if people start getting ideas and they don't like government and they start revolting? So you can like, see how it's in the cultural government corporate interest, not to say that like, oh, bad government or to label anything as wrong, is reality. It's not wrong. It's not bad. It's just what we've agreed to. And then we can look at that and make a different choice. So here in our society, it's culturally accepted to be at near zero.
Right. In terms of our energy reserves.
In terms of our which is
stockpile of being fulfilled.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know that right. What you're saying really resonates with me because I do think that that we are put on a wheel or we join, right? It's kind of this wheel of being constantly going, constantly needing, constantly consuming. And the times when I'm going more, right, when I have more on my plate, in times of real, real high activity, I spend more money in times of high activity.
Exactly, because you're eating
I've noticed,
like,
because I'm eating out, because I need a massage, because I need this and that and the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a way, right, and with, what's coming up for me is, you know, there's a way in which we all have ourselves kind of running scared, this idea that everything's going to fall out from underneath us if we don't keep up at this pace of work, the pace of consumption. And I happen to actually believe that that's not true. And I think we're starting to see the evidence of that, of an alternative. Just even in us having this conversation, you telling me, oh, you know, I'm having leisure time, I'm on the grass, and me agreeing with you that I do too. I do a lot of loafing. That is the beginning of change, because I think that part of the lie, part of the narrative is that our economy can only work that way. And I don't believe that that's true. I don't know if you have any comments or thoughts on that. This is kind of a different direction than we talked about.
Yeah. I'll say briefly that I think we can switch to a more fulfilling lifestyle as a culture. And I think it will mean that overall, you know, people slow down, maybe businesses aren't open 7 days a week. It's just like a shift in values. Like, oh yeah, you know, on Sundays, like pretty much everything's closed, right? So it's going to be less maybe convenient, but ultimately more fulfilling. And yeah, I don't think that things will like fall out from underneath us. The only case in which I've experienced the fallout from underneath you is when you're like going, and you're spending as you're going. So by the time you're burned out and you want to take a break, you literally don't have the finances to do that. That's the only pitfall that I've seen.
I've seen that too. I used to experience cycles of that and then be totally perplexed, right? Where I'm like, well, wait a minute, I'm supposed to have money for when I don't have any, you know, when this cycle of production is done. I'm supposed to have the money from the cycle of production, but I had spent all the money during the cycle of production.
Exactly, to keep you in that
higher
state.
The support that I needed to keep me in that state of activity.
So that's really
so. So I'll just circle back to that's one of the reasons. I mean, one of the key reasons that I think that conversations about this, about flow, and about recognizing the seasons and the cycles are so important, because we're starting to see a set of people and a set of business owners who are stepping back from that model, and who are using a different model, who are using a model of awareness and consciousness and cycles, and teaching that. So I have two related questions. Take them as you wish. One is, I'd love to talk about, you know, the relationship of cycles and being in flow to intuition or inner wisdom. And I'd also love to talk about it in relationship to the structural, systematic aspects of business and life. So,
yeah. So, my personal theory is that routine, which I translate to be ritual, and ritual are really your friends when it comes to intuition. Like, I think when in the beginning I used to get inspired, like on my walk or just at random times of the day, and now it's a lot more scheduled. It's a lot more routine, where I know that if I'm swimming, I put myself in environments where I know that I can be in a certain brain wavelength capacity, and then I'm going to receive intuitive insights. Like, I know that, you know, 5:30 in the morning until the kids wake up is, like, on a Monday in particular. Doesn't work as well different days of the week. But on Mondays, like, I know what Mondays are for me, and I know, like, what are the best times. And so I think scheduling yourself and kind of creating rituals and routines and just, like, a very finely tuned machine in those ways creates a lot of flow, actually. And I know your brain's like, what? And a lot of feminine entrepreneurs in particular will tend to be like, well, that limits my freedom, or like, that limits my flow. You know, only if you have that perspective on it. To me, at this stage, having these kind of structures in my life increases my capacity and increases my flow instead of it limiting me. So it really depends on the type of internal relationship we have to rituals and structures in our business and our lives.
Yeah, I agree with that. I have always been a person who has needed those, who has operated really, really well when they're in place. Mm-hmm. And even though I would love to think that, oh, yeah, you know, I'm flexible, it doesn't really matter, I just want to do what I want to do at the moment I want to do it, that in the end, that never really ends up working out. And
it's,
I think that that's...
It's like inefficient.
it totally is. Well, and then, you know, it's probably been more than a decade. More than a decade ago, and I've introduced this group to this book, I picked up this book by an artist. He's actually a choreographer who wrote this book, called The Creative Habit, which is about exactly what we're talking about. It's about how your habits create the container for your creativity. Like, creativity needs flow, needs bank. The river needs banks. Your creativity needs limitations. In order to thrive, and that's what you're talking about when you're talking about putting rituals in place. The other thing that I've found though about myself is that if the rituals or the structure is self-imposed, I do much better than if it's imposed upon me. Now,
yeah.
I am in some ways in the extreme example of that, in that my entire life is set up so that's the case, right? I don't have any kids. There's nobody else's demand to or on me. I mean, my dog who needs to go out. And I own my own business. So, I mean, I put things in place, but for the most part, I get to choose really like when things go into my schedule and when they don't. But I'm wondering, you know, have you had a relationship with or shifted your relationship with any structures or requests of you that are not self-imposed? You know, any routines that are not self-imposed? And what was that like? How were you able to shift that if it did occur? And if it didn't, that's fine too.
Yeah, I can't think of anything. I have, at this point, completely deleted everyone out of my life that does not fit into my terms. You know, there's definitely, like, me and my husband, you know, we co-create together. So, you know, you know, for us to create a schedule, you know, he states his needs, I stay at my needs, and, you know, we work together to create a schedule that really works for all of us, we look at the kids' needs, and so, you know, there's always, like, there's not even compromise, it's just, like, we both go for what is going to have each of us at higher capacity, like, highest capacity. So at this point, I literally cannot think of anything that is not created by me in terms of impacting my schedule.
That raises another question for me that I'm curious just on your take on it. And that is, you know, some people, I don't even know if it's some people, I think maybe all of us have had the experience of, Well, you know, self-imposed routine and rituals can be hard to establish and to maintain, right? Because who are we responsible to? It creates this very high level of self-responsibility to ourselves. What has your experience been in creating those and establishing and actually showing up for them for yourself?
Yeah. Well, I've obviously had the experience that we all have, which is you fall off the bandwagon for a couple of days, you don't do it, and you're like, oh, man, I really need to do that again.
I needed
and
to
so
do
there's,
it.
You know, there's that, like, inevitable falling off the bandwagon, not eating healthy or not exercising or not meditating or not doing the thing that you said you're going to do, and then you're suffering for it, and you're like, yep, that's why I need to do it. And then after that phase just came this link between trusting myself. And so being self-responsible, it's kind of like you having a relationship with yourself. It's similar to you having a relationship with another person. If someone in your life said, hey, I'm going to meet you here at 3 p.m. and you show up at 3 p.m. and they don't, and then you text them and you're like, or you call them and you say, hey, what's up? I'm waiting here for you. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to come today. I just didn't even bother to let you know. And you're like, that's rude. You're definitely not going to trust that person in the future. And the same thing for yourself. If you blow yourself off, you don't develop that self-trust mechanism. And so therefore, then it's harder for you to trust your own judgment when it comes to inspiration or your own self, you know, your own judgment about business decisions. It's just difficult for you to trust yourself. And that's a big, giant problem for an entrepreneur, to be internally untrustworthy. Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot run a business if you can't trust yourself. You cannot run a business because it relates to everything. If you say, okay, every morning at 7 a.m. I'm going to meditate, and you don't, and then you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to bring in, you know, $8,000 a month, right? And then there's a part of you that's like, well, you also said that you would meditate and you didn't, so what's to say you're going to bring in this money, right? So you can see the snowball effect of self-sabotage.
There's a way in which you get accustomed to not showing up for yourself and not doing
exactly
what
not
done, or what you have decided
yourself
that you wanted to do, and suddenly that which was subtle at first then becomes okay. It becomes okay
exactly
not to show up
totally.
It becomes okay not to follow through because it's just you who's watching. And suddenly,
yeah,
you know, as I'm saying that, go ahead.
I mean, I just, like, you know, I don't have control over other people, so I can't control if a friend stands me up or, you know, whatever. So, but to not be in control of myself and to be betrayed by myself in this way is just unacceptable to me at this point. It's, like, if there's no one else, like, if you can't rely on yourself to show up for yourself, then, like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, like, sorry, I get very passionate about this.
Go for it.
Like, you know, I'm just like, well, like, you're being, then you don't deserve to be in power over your own life. You don't deserve it because you're not responsible with the power that you have. Then get out of entrepreneurship and go get a job. Have someone else dictate your life.
Let's,
if you're not going to be responsible. Anyway.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that responsibility and following through for yourself. And let's talk about it in the context of the tendency to over, I won't even call it, I won't claim it as ours, but I'll say what can be the tendency in entrepreneurs, especially women, to overschedule. How it seems to me that the act of prioritizing, the act of reclaiming your values and what fit into it, the act of naming your routines would come first, right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're falling through. So I know that some, I know that a lot of entrepreneurs that I meet and talk to have this, and I've had it before too, have this kind of chronic issue, I'll call it, of overscheduling. And then they do. They get mm-hmm. into a routine of, well, I don't want to show up for that. And now I'm going to let that person down and I'm going to let me down. So I'm wondering if you've had any mm-hmm. experience with backing out of that. Would you share that with us?
Yeah, so I think that
like?
Goes back to my, mm-hmm. well, it just goes back to, so all of my routines and my habits and my rituals come from me observing myself and kind of noticing things like, okay, on Mondays I like to wake up really early because I get really inspired while taking a shower and getting ideas for blogs, but then I take that day to publish my blog articles. That's like Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And like that came from me observing, right? So I think
mm-hmm.
it's observing, and it was this act of observation of myself that led me to observe my own high schedule and low schedule times of my month. And this is, of course, very female, so I apologize to all the men on the line. So for me, I have times of the month where I prefer to be highly scheduled. Just like I love that time, like a good 10-day period where I have a ton going on. I like that,
mm-hmm.
and I crave that. And then I have a good 10-day period where it's kind of a medium flow, like it's not too much, but it's not too little. And then I have a good 10-day period where it's like I don't schedule anything. I schedule extremely little during those periods, and I let myself have some downtime. And that what has and that came from like months of observing myself, where I would do the overschedule thing, and I would keep my commitments, and I would get burnt out, and then I would just notice. And it just comes from a habitual practice of observing myself and noticing, and being like, okay, so kind of noticing where my period, where my monthly flow is, and noticing that, you know, the 10 days surrounding that, before and after, is like the time where I do not schedule things. I don't care
mm-hmm.
who it is. And that, you know, I have like my mastermind, which is weekly, and I have certain weekly commitments, but beyond those, nothing new goes into my schedule. And I save all of my sales calls and just kind of high activity time or interview requests or anything like that for the periods where it's high activity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And in fact, you're pointing out something that my husband and I just had a discussion about last week, actually, because the last 2 months I have been going through very, very high periods. Well, first of all, March and April through May are always very, very high periods of activity for the year for me.
Mm-hmm.
But what has happened in March and April is that the high activity of the month is during my cycle, when my
yeah.
body is in really, really low activity. And so what ends up
mm-hmm.
happening is I get very, very depleted, like non-functioning depleted. Like there'll be a point of, in
mm-hmm.
time where I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm out. I'm in bed. Like no one else can talk to me. I'm done.
Yeah.
And so the other day, the end of last week, he looked at me and he was like, I want to know why you continue to push yourself so hard like this. At which point, you know, I had to acknowledge that this was the second month in a row where I had not planned for that piece of it because there's still
exactly.
a part of me that wants to ignore it. You know, I mean, I even
yeah.
said this the other day. Breakfast, I'm like, how long have I been doing this? It's 35, 38 years I've been having this cycle. I've probably got about 10
yeah.
left.
Like, yeah.
I better hurry up and get on the bandwagon about how I need to take care of myself. So I'm glad that you pointed that out because I think that, I know we do not acknowledge those cycles unless we demand that we do ourselves because we don't have a cultural ritual around that. We don't have a cultural ritual around the slowness of a pace or a stepping back.
And that's one of the reasons why I left the the job or employment, the employment sector, is because I was required to be in a high to medium performing phase all the time. I couldn't tell my boss, you know what, my period's coming around, so I'm going to have 10 days or I'm just really not going to be showing up. He would look at me and be
not
like,
unless you wanted to, right, not unless you wanted to be
the
total stereotype, right?
Totally, right? Like, if you really don't want me in the office, I'll be bitchy and moody and, you know, telling people off. Like, I'm just going to stay home with my chocolate. And he'll be like, yeah, no. And at the time, as a young woman, I just didn't, you know, kind of had to do what I had to do and just suck it up and deal with it, which is why I became an entrepreneur, because now I don't have a boss telling me that I have to show up, and I just, you know, have the luxury of knowing when my low tide is, knowing when I kind of need to stay still and lay low and just take it easy and to kind of build up energy in my system and get inspired and just kind of be in that flow. And then, like, for me, right after my kind of low period is right when my high period comes, and then there's the middle, and then there's the low, and then the high again. And that really works for me, that, like 2 or 3 days after my period is done, then I'm, like, super scheduled, super high production mode.
Mm-hmm.
And those 20 days really balance themselves out for me, because I really just personally despise having a super low period where I'm usually not generating so much money. I can't stay in that place for too long. I need to, like, get into gear and start generating again. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just can't be without that generation. So for me, that's kind of how it works. It's like a really low, laying low period, and then like super, super generative right after, and then it kind of goes to medium pace.
Mm-hmm. And this works. So I feel like there's a little bit of an elephant in the room that I want to draw out. And that is, I think that there can be you know, there can be kind of a reflective, even if people don't know that it's bubbling up in them, kind of a reflective, defensive, not toward you, Aliyah, but just toward them doing this kind of thing themselves. There can be a reflective mechanism or a reflex mechanism in us to say, well, that won't work. Like, I can't do that. It's, you know, I'll let people down. I won't be able to serve clients. I won't earn what I otherwise would be able to earn. And I guess what I want to draw out is how this is working for you, how that really has not been, from what I know, I mean, you speak about it. That has not been your experience. Your experience is this is, can you speak to the fact that, you know, this is a productive model, is an effective model for you in running a business and growing it. Can we counteract that kind of fear, that stereotype that, you know, you have to be at that high level of production all the time in order to grow a successful business?
I would say that when I'm in quote-unquote low production mode, what I'm really doing is I'm not interfacing with other people. I don't have, like, a bunch of client call scheduled. I don't have interviews scheduled. I don't have a bunch of sales calls scheduled. So my interaction with others really goes down. And I actually make sure that my kids are kind of more with their dad or with my mom, or, like, I'm not as taking care of them. I do my version of the red tent as much as I can. And during that time, I'm not being productive. I am, in fact, being extremely generative in a very different way, which is that I'm actually understanding, okay, like, this is where my this is, like, 10 days of super critical thinking of what am I launching right now in this cycle, what am I launching, you know, next month and the month after, and what kind of marketing campaigns am I doing. During those times, I'm usually doing a lot more behind the scenes stuff in my business, where I'm planning out my next sales call, where I'm planning out launches, where I'm like getting the vision for like, you know, whatever it is that I need to do next. So I wouldn't necessarily call it like an unproductive time. I would call it a different type of production. Just like when we're sleeping, our body is like totally regenerating and our brain is working things out on the subconscious level in dream time. And then we wake up and we have a solution to a problem that we couldn't solve the night before, or like things like solve themselves overnight while you sleep. This is kind of the same thing as you're going into that visionary, that idea generating, that replenishing place where you're not like I'm not like totally ignoring my business.
Right.
I'm actually thinking about it a lot, but I'm not interfacing with anyone about it. Does that make sense?
Yes. So what I'm hearing is that what you're doing is matching the activity to the appropriateness of your energy cycle. And that for you, those you know, those ten days of not outwardly facing, not doing launches, not doing sales calls, those are internal. And you do the internal or planning or visioning work of your business to coincide with them.
Totally.
Yeah.
You'll find me in the Korean spa, in the crystal room. There's like this Korean spa near me that has like amethyst and rose quartz and like jade crystals.
I love that.
And I'm in there at 125 degrees sweating for like, you know, on and off. So I'm in the spa for like a good 6 hours. And that's a work day, because in that work day, I'm processing so much even logistical launchy type of stuff, but I'm also processing limitations and kind of like patterns that I'm seeing. You know, like there's a lot going on that you don't see. It's almost like, you know, when a woman becomes pregnant and you just don't know that she's pregnant for the first 5 or 6 months because nothing's happening on the outside, you know? It's kind of the same in this phase where like you're not interfacing with the outer world, but you're giving yourself space to turn inward and really just get your own internal affairs in order and processed and cleaned and kind of organized. And then at the end of that period, you go out and you launch with confidence. And I would say to the person that's saying, well, but I'm not out there doing stuff. If you don't give yourself that internal period, then you're just kind of, it's kind of like always being hungry and just eating whatever, you know, is in front of you, right? It's this like uncontrollable thing. So at that point, you're not really thinking about the type of clients that you want. You're not really thinking about or feeling into your visioning as like what you're launching. You're just kind of like operating by the seat of your pants, you know, at that point. And so I just don't think that that is as abundant or effective as when you do cycle yourself.
I think that's true, and I also think it's not as sustainable. It's like being in the sun all the time. Like you said, it's being at those high levels of activity all the time, where your production is not the same as visioning or conceptualization or analysis or strategy. So what I'm hearing you say is really, again, circling back to being in real awareness of the natural cycles.
And your own.
And using them.
Your own.
Yeah. So I know we have a couple people online. Would you like to take questions? Are you open to that?
I would love to take questions, yeah.
Excellent. All right. Does anyone have a question? Well, let me keep asking all the questions. I think the line is open.
Yeah, any questions, game.
No? Everybody's
maybe I'm scaring people.
No, I don't think so. I think you might be speaking their language.
I'm just digesting, Rebecca. I'm thinking of it.
Hi, Meredith. Meredith, you need this. Although you did tell me once that you do give yourself a lot of space between things, which I loved hearing. Did you have
I don't pay as much attention to the actual cycle of energy, and I think that that's a really good point to spend time observing that. So that's definitely helpful. I mean, I think I do that to a certain degree when I look at how I construct a week. But I haven't actually ever looked at it from a month-to-month perspective. And the other thing that I really like that Elias said was related to the, accountability to yourself. And, I mean, that's a biggie. So definitely some things to look at there. But I don't know that I have any particular questions.
Meredith, this is Anne. I had the same reaction. I don't know if it was the same reaction, but I did react to the learning to trust yourself piece. And, it was harsh and real.
Yeah,
very real, yeah.
Yeah. I think that I've also noticed that that trust piece is not just about trusting myself, and it becomes, I guess it really reminded me that I need to do things to allow myself to trust myself first, so that I could trust other people. In the same way, But I wrote down, be responsible for the power that you have. That was pretty pretty powerful to me.
Since we have ladies on the line, I'll say a little piece about feminine power, because it's actually been on my mind lately. Because it's very popular to talk about women in power. It's extremely popular to talk about feminine power and, reclaiming, being empowered women. And I hear very few people talking about feminine responsibility that comes with that power. Because we've all seen powerful people who are irresponsible, and power with irresponsibility is kind of scary, because they have a lot of power and they're just slopping it all over, violating people's human rights. And we've seen that, especially in particular in our masculine structure that we're coming out of, into the harmony with the masculine and feminine harmony. And we've seen masculine power be irresponsible. So it's super important for us as women entrepreneurs, I think, to be really responsible with our power. And when I say responsible, I mean using our time and our resources and our finances, and just being really responsible with our lot, with our power as entrepreneurs that we have. And when I say responsible, I don't mean drudgery and do people get? People get responsibility confused with obligation or something of that nature. It's actually just wearing clean underwear. being really, in integrity, authentic, really super, just taking a stand for a higher standard within yourself.
And I want to comment that the responsibility reinforces and augments the power. So, I mean, when we're talking about the responsibility of to ourselves showing up for our own routines, like, that cultivates our power, right? Because that's it. It comes from our trust in ourselves, our knowing ourselves, our acting in consistency with our intentions again and again and again. Like, not just saying it, but doing it. Walking the walk as well as talking the talk. That generates power, or at least our own understanding of our own power, so that we can own it and stand in it and use it authentically.
Nothing is like scarier than a woman in her power and in her integrity. It's like, you know, this is a rare bird who's like fully present, fully in her power and fully in integrity. And it's like, you see people like almost like cower. You're like, oh man,
well,
she's going to find out about me.
Say that. Yeah, it's so interesting that we've come to these two conclusions. Well, it's so interesting that these two things have come up in this conversation, responsibility and, you know, people's reaction to that kind of stuff. I'm writing a blog post about an experience I had a couple weeks ago around this. And I think what I'm hearing you say, or what my, and of course it filtered through my like understanding or my experience, is that, you know, people can have really strong reactions to that. It can be like, oh my God, yes, like I love her. I want that for myself, right? Not that I want to emulate her, like that I want her life, but just like, I want that for myself. I want to be in myself and like doing it that way, right? That can be one reaction, very strong reaction. And another reaction can be like reactionary, like I want to mock this. I want to criticize this. I want to shut this person down. Shame them if I can out of the room to tamp that so that I don't have to feel uncomfortable in the face of this. It's an interesting and very, very challenging thing to witness.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of one of the biggest underlying fears as we talk about being in flow and we talk about really you know, harnessing our own, you know, expanding our own capacity. We're talking about our ability to take on more vital life force energy into our own being, which is, you know, in my opinion, which is power, right? So the more of a powerful person we become and the more we make people uncomfortable with the amount of physical power that we have, I think that's where the responsibility on our part comes in, to, you know, honor that. Honor where people are at. This isn't like about, this is about kind of like, okay, you know, maybe I need to change my marketing to appeal to a different type of person because the group that I'm currently appealing to is, it's kind of generating criticism or people are uncomfortable with my power and the responsibility that I have. Like, you know, so it's kind of, you know, if you walk into a room and you're making everyone in the room uncomfortable, you should probably just leave. You're kind of like, oh,
you're the wrong
place. Wrong party. Oops, sorry, you guys, wrong party, you know? Okay, let me, like, go to the next room. And so obviously, like, this has to do with kind of what you have choice over, which is your marketing and your branding and the clients that you work with. So kind of allowing people to deselect themselves out of your field if they're uncomfortable. And kind of just be like, well, you know, maybe I'm not the right person to assist you. You should go to work with someone else. Bye. See you later. And I just think that, like, this isn't, like, we're not, like, imposing our power on people at that point. We're just the people who love it and resonate with it. That's the vein that we're going with, right? At least for me, I'm not necessarily looking to go and make other people feel uncomfortable. You know, that's kind of my kind of view on it. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, we have choices. The marketing, the branding, but also we have conscious choices about the circles in which we build our business,
mm-hmm.
those in which we trust and rely upon to help us with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like where we put it out there to have a dialogue, maybe around some of these bigger issues, like we're having one here.
Mm-hmm.
So we do. We do, and at the same time, there's always, I wouldn't say always, but there can be a surprise element to that, where it's like, oh, I thought I was in one place. And I'm in another. How did I not read that energy differential? Like, what was it that got stuck there? You know, that I was not aware of, that jarred me into kind of this awareness around it. So it can be very interesting. Dance,
definitely.
Important dance, yeah. Important dance. Okay. Well, this has been fantastic. Is there anything else? We're about at an hour, so I will be mindful of Aliyah's time and let
mm-hmm.
us close up. But if there's anything else, Aliyah, that you would like to end on, or if anyone else would like to ask a question of Aliyah before we close, please do.
Does anyone have a question?
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good, too. Thank you very much.
Okay, good.
I would say to just embrace your flow and your power and to really, this is such a multifaceted topic, but really, you know, as we expand our capacity, I think consciousness and mindfulness around all these different aspects, it really serves us well. And also knowing that, you know, there's no need for us to be afraid of expanding our own capacity beyond the limits of what, quote unquote, our tribe or the people around us can handle. I think our reality is very fluid and it moves and shifts with our expanding capacity. I would just say there's no need to limit your capacity and your power and your harmony with yourself. And just, you know, if it feels good, just keep, you know, feels in alignment for you and you're, you know, being responsible with your power, just keep going with it is my advice.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. This is such a wonderful
you.
Conversation.
Great.
Thank you for being here. I know that I've enjoyed it. So
well, thank
always
you
a pleasure, Aliyah. You are very
thank
welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. All right. Take good care. Bye bye.
Thank you all. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye everyone. Thanks. Namaste. Bye-bye.
Bye.